The European Space Agency just approved the project LISA, which is a space-based observatory which will study gravitational waves. Norway have a huge role in this project. They will build the instruments, be part of building the spacecraft and the ground segments for LISA. And in today's episode, we are going to talk more about this exciting project, which can lead to a lot of new findings in physics. Today, I am sitting with Professor David Mota from the Institute of Astrophysics at the University of Oslo. David, welcome to the Astronomy Podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being here.
Could you please tell me a little bit about yourself, your background, and why you got involved in astrophysics and this project?
Yes. So I am... I have my first degree, my bachelor. It was in engineering because I liked always, since I was a kid, mathematics and physics. Well, I should say those were the easy subjects for me because I didn't have to memorize. So I went to engineering, and in engineering, I went for a five-year degree in Lisbon in Portugal. And in the last 2 years, we had the option to study theoretical physics, quantum mechanics, cosmology, general relativity, astrophysics in general. And when I took those subjects, I really fell in love on the subject. And I was motivated by one of the professors there to go and study further astrophysics, and in particular cosmology. So I went to the UK, I went to University of Cambridge to do my master and my PhD, where I work in the group of a quite famous scientist, Stephen Hawking.
Oh, really?
Yes. So he was the head of the group there. And I worked in Cambridge for 4 years for my master and my PhD. After that, I went to Oxford as a researcher, and I stayed there for 2 years. Then I went to the University of Heidelberg in Germany for 3 years. And then I came to Oslo in 2009, where I became associate professor. And since then, I've been here, working at the Department of Astrophysics. So, yes, in terms of why I'm interested in this topic, it was always puzzling for me, the nature of gravity, in fact. So gravity, I should say, is probably one of the oldest forces that mankind has tried to understand. Since Aristotle's, he was wondering why, for instance, the air is above rocks and then rocks go underneath the water. And of course, the first formulation for gravity came with Newton. So it's probably one of the oldest forces that mankind has been trying to understand and to write a mathematical expression for that, some physical formula, even before electromagnetism, even before the strong interaction which keeps quarks together, or the weak interaction which is the responsible for the radioactive decays. So gravity, in spite of being the oldest one that we have been trying to understand, in fact is the one that we less understand, in my opinion. Well, you can see For Newton, gravity was just a force like the other ones. But in the early 20th century, Einstein came and he published his theory of general relativity, where gravity wasn't a force anymore. Gravity was basically a consequence of the curvature of space and time. So the nature of gravity is something really puzzling in theoretical physics. And as an astrophysicist and a cosmologist, we have some very promising tools to understand the nature of gravity. So that's basically the aim of my research in general terms. I use astrophysical and cosmological phenomena to understand a little bit what is gravity, in fact.
What are gravitational waves? How to put that in simple terms?
So gravitational waves are ripples or perturbations in space-time. So what does that mean? So I think people in general, they know what are water waves. If you are on a beach or a river, you see waves, and hey, waves will be perturbation or ripples on the water. So the water molecules, they will come together to form a wave, and then they will go apart, you know, whether when the wave has passed, you know, like the sound waves, we are talking to each other, there's a sound wave as well. So I produce perturbation in the air, and this perturbation travels from my mouth to your ears. That's why you can hear me. So, and the way the perturbation goes is that these ripples, I create some pressure, so the air molecules, they contract, and they expand. And that contraction expansion travels all the way to you, so you can hear me. Not all the waves are waves where the medium oscillates, so the medium contracts and expands. For instance, electromagnetic waves, they travel, and the perturbation is not on the medium. They just travel in vacuum, for instance. So gravitational waves are like water waves, air waves. These are perturbations on space in itself. So space will contract and will expand as they travel through. So that's the gravitational waves. So we could have called them, in fact, space-time waves. We don't need to call them gravitational waves. But since for Einstein, space-time and the space-time perturbations and curvatures, that's basically gravity, people call it gravitational waves. But you can think of them as space-time waves. Yeah.
And how does these waves form? What are causing them to form?
So these waves forms, for instance, when you have two objects, for instance, two stars, two black holes, but even two objects like two small cups of coffee, you know, for instance, rotating around each other, these would create a gravitational wave. So every time you have, for instance, two bodies accelerating around each other, that would create gravitational waves.
So these waves are created like it can be in a massive scale, like stars, black holes, but also things on Earth. So the gravitational waves are everywhere in the universe?
That's correct. Gravitational waves are everywhere in the universe. You can create even from two atoms going around each other. The question is, those waves are really, really tiny. You know, so there's when you have black holes or neutron stars rotating around each other, you can think of them like these will be like tsunami kind of waves that they are produced. While if you put just two cups of coffee of two people running around each other, those would be like a small pebble falling to the ocean. So the perturbations in the ocean, they're going to be much, much smaller.
And now that we know what gravitational waves are, why is it important for us to study them and to understand them? What do they tell us about the universe?
That's a very good question, yeah. So I think for that, I'd like to tell you a story of an analogy. So the quick answer for that is that gravitational waves give us a new way of seeing or hearing the universe, let's say. Gravitational waves allow you to hear the universe for the first time. Before, we only saw the universe with our eyes, with our telescopes. Now we can hear the universe. And the example is that, imagine that you go out camping in a forest. It's completely dark. You're in the middle of the forest. You have some headphones over here, noise-canceling headphones, so you cannot hear anything and you cannot see anything. So it's fantastic when you wake up in the morning and the sun is out, the light is out, so you can see the forest around you. Yes? So this is what we have been doing up to now with our universe. We see stars, we see galaxies, cluster of galaxies, lots of phenomena. But up to a few years ago, we still had our noise-canceling headphones on us. Just like when you wake up in the morning, your camping tent, and you have your headphones. So you haven't removed your headphones. So when you look at the forest, you see, you can even think, oh, I'm alone in this forest. There are only trees around me or plants. Yes? And you don't even realize that there must be something, maybe something else there. And when you remove your headphones, you start to hear noise. And these noises will tell you that maybe you are not alone in the forest. So if you are in Norway, maybe you can hear wolves or moose or whatever animals or dogs going on the forest, people walking on the forest. So you can hear them, even if you cannot see them. So gravitational waves is the same. At the point we can start hearing the universe, you might discover new phenomena in the universe. You might find new things that you couldn't see with your eyes. So it's the same thing. So gravitational waves will open up a completely new window to understand our universe. And even in the sense that, imagine, just from, for instance, when you are in the forest, your vision is very limited by the trees. For instance, it's a very dense forest. Your vision and the way you see the forest is going to be quite limited from because of the light. You can't see beyond, I don't know, 5 meters because there's lots of trees. But with the sound in a forest, you can hear, for instance, a wolf several kilometers away from you. Even if you cannot see it, you know there's, for instance, a wolf several kilometers. It's the same, in fact, with gravitational waves. With gravitational waves, we will be able to hear phenomena in the universe which are much further away than what light is. And that's really fantastic. That's really, really, it has the potential to tell you not only things that you know about universe and understand them better, because now, you know, it's like looking at a wolf with the eyes, and now you can see what kind of noises that animal has to you. But you might even see phenomena in the universe that you never saw because light wasn't able to reach your telescope, but you might be able to hear that. And this is something that, for instance, that we aim to do with LISA, to hear objects that we won't be able to see. You know?
Could you tell a little bit more about LISA? First of all, what does LISA stand for?
LISA is the Laser Interferometer Space Aircraft. And if I'm not mistaken, yeah. And LISA is going to be basically 3 satellites that are going to be on orbit. These satellites, they'll be separated from each other for about 2.5 million kilometers, each of them. And they will be positioned about 50 million kilometers away from the Earth. So just to give an example, so each satellite will be separated from each other 2.5 kilometers. The distance from the Earth to the Moon is just 384,000 kilometers. So each satellite is going to be, you know, more than 10 times away from each other than the distance from the Earth to the Moon. So they're going to be really far away from each other. And they will create this triangle. And these satellites will be connected by laser beams. So there's going to be a laser going from one satellite to the other, and they will form a triangle. And the aim of these satellites is to detect or to hear the gravitational waves that will be produced, for instance, by black holes merging in the universe or neutron stars merging in the universe.
What kind of equipment is on LISA that can detect these signals?
The specifics of the technology of the equipment themselves, I cannot tell you, because I work more on the theoretical side of the gravitational waves. But what I can tell you in general, so basically 2 very important equipments, one are the MIROs and the laser. So there will be 3 satellites, and they will send a laser beam from one satellite to the other, which will reflect in MIROs and will go to the other satellite. So they're going to form a triangle. And the idea is that when a gravitational wave comes and goes through those satellites, goes through the laser beam, it will make the satellites to oscillate. So just like if you are you have a boat on the sea and there's a wave, the boat will go up and down. So the boat will oscillate, yes, will expand, will have a higher height and a lower one. The LISA satellite is going to be the same. When a gravitational wave comes, it's just a wave in space. So space will stretch and will contract. And when the wave stretches and contracts, the satellite, the distance between the satellites will be notoriously different. people will notice, wow, there's something here which made the distance between my satellites to change. And that's something we associated to gravitational waves.
Okay, so the difference, this difference is something that also will be measured and used to analyze the result.
Yes, precisely. That's in fact the main measurement, is to measure how the distance between the satellites changes. Because, and what we'll see is that there are very specific ways of changing the distance. So we can predict very well, for instance, if I have two massive objects, like for instance, two black holes with a given mass, rotating with a given speed at a given distance from us, we know, we can calculate within the theory of general relativity how the distance between the satellites will change, how this oscillation will happen, because it's an oscillation, it's a wave. So it will stretch and will compress. So it will oscillate. And this oscillation, the way it changes this distance, it's basically the signature for, oh, there is a gravitational wave that passed through our satellite.
Are there similar equipment on Earth today that can measure gravitational waves? And what is the advantages of having this equipment in space rather than on Earth?
Yes. So yes. So there are equipment already. There are already several experiments on Earth which measure the gravitational waves. In fact, those were the first ones we have detected gravitational waves. There are two laboratories in the US, one in Italy and one in India, that are now operating. This is the LIGO laboratory, the Virgo and Kraga, and they work in a similar way. They have also laser beams. There's no triangle, it's just each of them is a linear laser beam. So the laser goes from one place to another, reflects in the mirror, and bounces back a few times. So they are about a distance, it's like 100 kilometers, well, a bit more. So, and we try to detect changes in the distance between the mirrors. This is 150 kilometers, something like that. These small changes when gravitational waves go through the Earth. And these changes in the mirror, they are measured in the US, in two places in the US, also one place in Italy and one place in India. And it's the same principle. When a gravitational wave goes through the Earth, the distance between the mirrors, it should oscillate. In fact, all the distances in the Earth should change. Even the distance between me and you, yes, the distance, the size of this room, the size of this table, everything should change. And it does change when a gravitational wave goes through. But of course, we can't see it, we can't detect it, because this change is very small. But with LIGO, Virgo, and Kraga, we have already been able to measure these changes. And now these oscillations, because it's more, we measure the oscillation that will happen in the distance between the mirror. Now, as you can imagine, these are lasers which are buried on the ground. But there are lots of oscillations going on planet Earth. You have earthquakes. You have just movements from... Even someone driving a car to the laboratory where we have these measurements will create changes. And we are talking about here, just to give an idea, we're talking about changes in the length of the mirrors of about the size of a nuclei of an atom. So it's really, really small, really, really small, 10 to the minus 18 meters changes. So just someone walking by the mirrors, that would make a change, the mirror to oscillate. So it's really, really difficult to do these experiments on Earth because there are too many phenomena. Even the fact that, you know, it's a hotter day, you know, or a colder day, that will make the mirrors to change, you know. So doing this in space, you know, it's a much more quiet environment. And there are no earthquakes or no people walking there or no cars, yeah. So it's much, much easier. That's one point. The other one is that on Earth, we are very limited in terms of distances. Our laser beams, they are just a few hundred kilometers long. In LISA, we can go to 2.5 million kilometers. So the type of signals that we can hear, they are different. So nowadays, with LIGO and Virgo, the experiments which we have on Earth, we can, for instance, see the mergers of black holes which have solar masses. So they are, the mass of the black hole is maybe, I don't know, 20, 30 suns, each of the black holes. With LISA, we'll be able to see maybe the merger of black holes, which are thousands of, even millions of times the suns in terms of masses. So much bigger black holes merging. That we cannot listen to those mergers with the nowadays equipment that we have in the universe, on Earth.
What kind of work will the scientific community in Norway be doing in this project? Will it be the data analysis which comes down from the project?
Yes, precisely. So we have different kinds of groups. So there's a very big group, in fact, a major group in Stavanger University, and where they are building a data center there, where part of the LISA data will be stored in Stavanger. And so there's lots of computers and servers and hard disks to store the data. And part of the data analysis will be done there as well. It's more also a center where people all around the world, every institution which is connected and works for LISA, will be able to access the data and analyze the data itself. But on the other hand, we have other scientists in Norway, like people in Oslo, people in Trondheim, who are interested. They won't be working on the data analysis themselves or the storage of the data. They'll be more interested to do science related to LISA. So for instance, in Oslo, here in the group, we are more interested on testing theories of gravity, which go beyond general relativity, beyond Einstein gravity, to see if those theories of gravity are viable or not in the eyes of LISA, let's say.
Okay, so you, in one way, you will also validate that Einstein was right, or?
Yes, because, it's like trying to see whether, the idea is always to test the theory. So for instance, up to now, general relativity, the theory that Einstein proposed for gravity, passes all the tests that we have been doing. But there are still some puzzles there. And some puzzles in cosmology, there are two main puzzles in cosmology, which are related to gravity itself. One is the dark matter and the other one is dark energy. And the scientific community strongly believe that the nature of dark matter and the nature of dark energy might be connected to the theory of gravity that we use, and might be an indication that maybe the theory of general relativity, of Einstein theory of general relativity, is not really applicable when we go to very large scales in the universe. And so LISA will allow us to test the theory of general relativity at those very large scales, very far away. And up to now, Einstein theory of general relativity has passed all the tests very, very nicely, but we have been testing with LIGO, Virgo, so we have been limited to, these smallish black holes or stellar masses black holes. Now we are going to go at even further in the universe to even larger scales and to even more massive black holes, and with more accuracy as well. So that brings the possibility of testing other theories of gravity, which go beyond general relativity, with the data. But you are correct. Up to now, Einstein theory of general relativity has been passing with fly colors all the tests. And all up to now, everything that we've been seeing with the gravitational waves matches really well Einstein theory of general relativity. After saying that, it doesn't mean that the theory of Einstein general relativity is the correct one.
Yes.
You know, it's like...
It's just the best version that we know of as of now.
Yes.
Like, we don't have any better theory that holds up.
Yes, precisely, yes. And it's more like also the theory of Einstein general relativity has been tested in very specific regimes. It's like, for instance, when you ask, for instance, if you ask for the curvature of the Earth, you know, is the Earth flat or not, or is curved, you know? If you do this kind of test, for instance, in the Netherlands or in Denmark, you might be tempted, oh, wow, if I look at in 200 kilometers around me, the Earth is flat. If you're going to ask someone in Tibet or Nepal, he will tell you, no, the Earth is not flat, it's full of mountains. So when you test your theory, you have to be aware that you're testing your theory in a given environment. In this case, either in the Netherlands or Denmark or in Tibet or Nepal. But sometimes you have to get out of this environment to test your theory in a more general kind of environment. Yeah, so testing the curvature of the Earth when you go to space, and let's look at the whole Earth. So with theory of general relativity, it's the same. We have been testing general relativity in very specific environments, on Earth, in the solar system, and now with gravitational waves coming from stellar mass black holes. But we aim to see what is going to happen when we have supermassive black holes, these black holes with their millions of solar masses, for instance, or when we look at really in the universe, in the early universe, really far away at very far away distances, does general relativity still holds or not? And as scientists, you have always, always to keep an open mind and trying to test all your theories the best you can. You know?
And one thing I was wondering about, will the knowledge of the increased knowledge of gravitational waves also tell us something about the expansion of the universe? For example, for like a year or so, I interviewed a professor, Øystein Elgarøy, about dark energy, dark matter, and we discussed something really interesting, that the expansion of the universe seems to be breaking the speed of light. So is that something that can be more studied if we know more about gravitational waves?
Yes, it can, yes. So the whole question is that nowadays, when we look at the light that comes from supernovae, type 1a, so these are basically stars that explode, and this luminosity, we can measure how far away they are. Within the theory of general relativity, the only way to explain the luminosity of this supernova is that the universe is expanding in an accelerated way. So within the theory of general relativity, that's really strange, because we expect the universe to be expanding, but the expansion should be slowing down, because we are made of matter, and matter is heavy, and we are attractive. So there's the negative attraction from gravity, which should pull things together. And what we found out in 1998 is that, in fact, it seems that galaxies in the universe, the whole universe seems to be expanding. So it's space that is expanding. It's not just the galaxies moving in space. And this led the conclusion that maybe there's a dark energy component, which makes in the expansion of the universe, or maybe general relativity breaks down, and maybe there's some repulsive gravity outside. Now, all these measurements about the expansion of the universe and the nowadays acceleration of the universe were made using supernovae, so light that explodes. The problem is that, as I told you, you can imagine that if you look in a forest, you are very limited of how far away you can see, because there are so many trees that you won't see trees which are very far away. With supernova, is the same. You can see them very far away because they are really bright, but there's a limit of, because they become very faint, first of all, and there's lots of dust and gas, so light interacts as it travels towards us. So we are limited in terms of how far we can see these supernovae in the universe. But with LISA, we can hear black holes merging at distance which are much, much further away. Much further away. So with supernovas, you can see up to when the universe was maybe twice its size, three times its size, smaller. With the gravitational waves, you can hear the universe when the universe was about 10 times smaller its size, in principle. So you can hear much, much further away. As I said, it's like the wolf crying in the forest. So you can hear kilometers away, not just a few meters when you see. And that's what it will tell us. It will tell us how the universe has been expanding since it was 10 times smaller all the way up today. So that will give us a lot of information about the expansion of the universe, and also about the nature of this dark energy, or even if maybe general relativity, Einstein gravity, breaks down at those scales. So what's the best theory to explain why the universe seems to be accelerating? So LISA will open a completely new windows, will allow us to see even further way.
Yeah, because what I find really interesting is that we have all been taught in school about the maximum speed something can have is the speed of light. And if we can find out that we can, or matter can have speed more than the speed of light, that would be revolutionary.
Yes. So here, I think there is maybe a misunderstanding. So what the theory of relativity says is that matter cannot travel faster than the speed of light. So, and by matter, I mean an object going through space and not traveling faster than the speed of light. What happens with the expansion of the universe is that it's true that the expansion of the universe nowadays goes faster than the speed of light. That's true. But it's space in itself that goes faster than the speed of light, not the galaxies. The galaxies, they are just attached to, because we people, objects, galaxies, we live in some region of space. And it's the distance that is really moving faster than the speed of light, not the objects. So we don't violate relativity at this point, yeah. But it's true that objects, space in itself, can travel faster than the speed of light, and it seems to be the case. But that's very strange anyway. It's a very strange phenomena, yes.
So what do you think will be the most interesting finding with all this LISA project? What is your hope for this project in your research here?
Oh, I think there are lots of things that can be found.
If you can highlight one thing that you're really excited about.
Well, okay. So in general, again, going back to when you are in a forest and listen to sounds, you know, imagine what it is to take out your noise-canceling headphones for the first time in your life and you start hearing that all the bugs, all the animals, and in fact, your forest is not a forest here in Nordmarka, but you are in a tropical forest, you know, with lots of different kind of animals. So you, with LISA is the same. You might be hearing such strange phenomena out there that can just open up a completely new window about what you see the universe, you know? It's just like someone who thinks when camping in Nordmarka and in fact is camping in the Amazon forest because the sounds are completely different. So that's something that's surprising, and it will be fantastic that we hear things that we could not even imagine. But not going there, okay? So to be very specific, a very interesting test that I would like to, LISA, to be done, since we talked about traveling at the speed of light, is that within general relativity, Einstein gravity, the gravitational waves, they should travel at the speed of light as well. Because both are massless, these are the propagators of the force, they have no mass. So they both should travel at the same time. And we have already done some tests, and with LIGO, Virgo, we have already measured how fast gravitational waves travel. And the way it happens is that you have, for instance, two neutron stars, and neutron stars, they have magnetic fields. So you can see when they merge, because there is kind of a burst of light. There's kind of an explosion. So when this phenomena happen, you can see the light coming out from that binary system of neutron stars, and you know the distance from these neutron stars. So you know how long it took light from, for instance, that binary of neutron stars to reach Earth. At the same time, with LIGO and Virgo, you could also hear the gravitational waves that are produced, because when these neutron stars merge, they also produce a burst of gravitational waves. And since you know the distance, you can also measure how long it took the gravitational wave to travel to us. Within general relativity, both the light and the gravitational waves should come at the same times, because both travel at the speed of light together. And our measurement says that this is correct up to 10 to the minus 18. Okay, so the difference between the speed of light and the gravitational waves is the same up to 10 to the minus 18. With LISA, I hope we can even go to even further precision. And if with LISA we find out that gravitational waves travel a little bit slower than light, it means that the gravitational waves are not massless. They have a mass. And that means that general relativity is wrong. We have to go beyond general relativity. So that would be an indication that Einstein's theory of general relativity might break down. So this would be a very fundamental change in the way we see gravity. We need to go beyond general relativity. But with LISA, so that's a very fundamental question. What is gravity? What is space and time, etc.? But there are other questions about, for instance, how do black holes form in the universe, especially the supermassive black holes? We don't have a good model to form supermassive black holes. We know they exist, for instance, in the center. Almost in the center of every galaxy in our universe, there must be a supermassive black hole. However, our theories, we cannot account for how we can have all these supermassive black holes in the center of galaxies since the beginning of the universe, because it would take much longer than the whole age of the universe to form supermassive black holes. So there's something very puzzling here. How is it possible we have supermassive black holes and we see them nowadays and we can hear them? Well, we'll be hearing them with LISA. But where did they come from? How did they form? So this is something that LISA will give us insights about that.
So not only gravitational waves, but the findings can open up possibilities to maybe give answers to other phenomena in astronomy also.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. You can hear, it's like the same, for instance, the nature of dark matter.
Yes.
Yeah. So dark matter is this component that, again, if Einstein's theory of general relativity is correct, the only way that we can explain how stars, for instance, move in a galaxy is because there is a dark matter component that makes stars move really fast, for instance. Now you can imagine like two black holes or two neutron stars moving in a dark matter fluid. So imagine that, and the nature of dark matter will change the nature of the gravitational waves that will be produced. So let me give an example. So imagine that you have two rocks moving around each other, okay, in water. So the waves that the water will be produced, they are going to be different from if I put two rocks in oil, in oil, for instance, and make them move. The waves in the oil are going to be different from the waves in the water. So I can, for instance, looking at how the pattern of waves that reach me, I can tell, oh, these rocks, they were moving inside water, and the other ones, they were moving inside oil.
Yeah.
So it's the same for black holes. So black holes, they are in galaxies, so it means they are surrounded by dark matter. So two black holes rotating around each other in a dark matter field or fluid, depending on the properties of dark matter, the waves will also change. So LISA will also be able to give us insights about the nature of dark matter. What is this dark matter that seems to exist in the universe? So this is another phenomenon that LISA can also tell us about. Yeah.
What other kind of contributions are Norway doing in this project? Are they helping, for example, building the instruments or putting the observatory up in space, or is it just the academic theoretical part?
It's more on the academic theoretical part. Well, there's the data center that this is being built in Stavanger. That's something very concrete because, you know, the storage of the data that LISA will collect needs to go somewhere. And they have several places in the world because you need to back up the data. You don't want to lose all the data because there's a fire or there's an engineering problem or some electricity goes off in some parts. So there are going to be several data centers in the world, and in Stavanger, there's going to be one of them. So this is something very concrete. But the rest of the Norwegian community is more preparing theoretical work. What does that mean? For instance, what does it mean talking about different theories of gravity or different models of dark matter? If someone has a theory of gravity or a model for the dark matter, a model for the dark energy, how does that will affect the gravitational waves? What kind of gravitational waves shall we expect from a dark matter theory or from a dark energy theory or from a gravity theory? This needs to be computed. And usually it's not computed by hand because it's it's almost impossible. So we need to use computers. So I think a strong contribution from Norway will be to simulate the formation of and the pattern of gravitational waves for black holes merger, neutron stars merger, etc., for different theoretical models, different theories of gravity, different theories of dark matter, different theories of dark energy. And with these simulations, we can tell the LISA astronomers and the people who do data analysis, look, if you see a pattern of gravitational waves which looks like this, that means that maybe we are seeing that the nature of dark matter is this kind of very specific. Or if you see a pattern of gravitational waves which looks like that, that means that maybe general relativity is breaking down at those scales. So this is what mainly the Norwegian scientific community is doing. Yeah.
When do you estimate that we will see actual results from the project?
That's a very good question. Yeah.
Is it like 5 years, 10 years, or?
Well, no, for sure. Well, LISA will be launched, hopefully, if everything goes with plan, 2034. So it's going to take 10 years for LISA to be launched. And then there's a whole period that we have to wait to be sure that the instruments are well calibrated. And then we will collect the data, and then the data needs to be analyzed. So I would expect something around 2037, maybe. That's when we'll have maybe a bit before, if everything goes well. But with these space missions, there are always delays. So, I would say maybe 2037. That will be the year that we'll have the first LISA science and articles coming out. Yeah. So we still have some time to prepare for that. Yes.
Thank you very much for a really interesting talk, and good luck with the project.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure being here.